Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 24th, right, of June. The article in the – maybe it caught your fancy too. I don't think we've ever talked about this for a full hour. The public editor section of the New York Times last weekend titled Pantsuits and the Presidency. And it concerns the number of complaints that the New York Times received of their coverage of Senator Clinton, with too much emphasis on her appearance, too many stereotypical words that appeared to put her down and dismiss a woman's potential for leadership, and too many snide references to her as cold or unlikable. When he pressed for details looking at the coverage of the Times, the subject often boiled down to Maureen Dowd, and you can bring up Maureen Dowd if you'd like. Some supporters going beyond the Times here of Hillary Clinton believe that sexism really did cover news coverage of her presidential campaign. And there are many who are proposing boycotts of cable news networks, and a media hall of shame has been created by the National Organization of Women. You can talk about whether or not you think that is deserved and who you might put on that media hall of shame. We will go beyond this as well and look at women in politics this hour of the program. Professor Iva Deutschman is a professor of political science at Hobart and William Smith College. She serves on the editorial board for the National Journal Women and Politics, holds professional memberships with the American Political Science Association, International Society of Political Psychology, the New York State Political Science Association, also the Northeastern, same association, Political Science, and the Australian Studies Association of North America. She co-hosts a weekly radio show, Plato's Cave, that offers commentary on politics, the press, and the popular media, and has authored many pieces in publications in major journals, including The Ideology of Moderate Republicans in the House. We'll be welcoming phone calls, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050 on the email, it's talk@wpr.org. Professor Deutschman, hello. Thank you very much for calling, or for being with us and having a chance to have people call in to talk to you.
It's my pleasure.
You said that in one of the papers I was reading about you, every woman running for office, Democrat or Republican, knows what she's up against. What is she up against?
Well, you live in a society that has some pretty rigid gender roles. And even with all of the changes and the sort of post-feminist society we're allegedly inhabiting, some of these roles are still pretty traditional. You referred to that wonderful piece in the New York Times, and the same Sunday Times magazine section had an article on married couples and their very traditional gender roles in terms of cooking, caretaking, etc. So it sounded like these, and they said in the article, it sounds like it's 1956, and it's 2008. So.
Right.
Plus que la change, plus que la même chose, as our dear friends in France would say.
You also talk about the fact, and I didn't really realize this was true, that female Republicans have become a rare commodity.
Totally.
Isn't that something?
It's very scary, actually. If you think about the fact that there are virtually no African-American Republicans, right? There are none in Congress now, not a single one. And if you go back to the 1960s, you will see that there were about 20 women in Congress in the 1960s, but they were evenly distributed. In other words, there were 10 Republican women and 10 Democratic women. And this was true for several years. You get into the 70s, there's a little maldistribution where there's more Democrats than Republicans in the 80s, you get relatively equal distribution again, and the numbers gone up.
Mm-hmm.
By the time you get to the 90s, you get a much higher number of women. And in 2008, we've got about 90 women in Congress. But the distribution between the parties is so skewered. There are now about 20 Republicans and 70 Democrats. And so what it means is you're looking at a Republican Party that at least on the congressional level is white male, almost exclusively, in a society that isn't. And, you know, as somebody who supports two competitive political parties, I find this very disturbing because I'm concerned the Republican Party is going to become non-competitive because of its makeup. I mean, if it really is the party of quote-unquote old white men, how many old white men are there in this country?
Right.
You know, they're not going to be a competitive political party.
And simultaneously, correct me if I'm wrong here, but in the Senate, should Obama become the next president, you would have no black senators, right?
No, you are correct. So, I mean, again, black senators, very unusual. Barbara Walters, did you read her book?
Yes, I did. We just had her on.
Oh, okay. So, you know, she had an affair with Brooke.
Right.
Who was an African-American senator from Massachusetts. That, by the way, very interesting because it's hard to imagine a Republican, right, from a state like Massachusetts, right? It's one of the bluest states. But when Edmund Brooke was elected, it was so long ago. It was a different Republican Party. And that's part of what I'm saying here. It was a Republican Party that was more moderate, and therefore you were going to see more African-Americans, more women, et cetera. When the party became more right of center, women tend to be more moderate in their politics, both elected women and women in voters. They're more moderate than men. So extremism, if you will, in political parties is a turnoff to women.
Interesting. All right. So tell me, should there be a media hall of shame and who would be on it? It's been created by the National Organization for Women for the treatment of Senator Hillary Clinton.
Let me tell you, if I'm going to create a media hall of shame, I'm probably going to have other issues in it as well. I mean, you know, I'm not saying there was no negative treatment of Senator Clinton. Of course there was, just like there was, is, and will continue to be problematic treatment of Senator Obama. These things are not unusual. But I guess if I'm thinking of terrible things the media have done, my list would include, I don't know, all of the coverage of Britney Spears instead of Iraq.
Right.
You know, I really feel like there have been major, major disappointments on the part of the mainstream media of what they cover. And that's worse to me than the fact that the mainstream media are made up of reporters of flesh and blood, many of whom are men. Those of whom are women have the same biases we all do. I mean, this is part of the problem, right? We're people. We bring the biases of our race, our gender, our socioeconomic class, our religion, our ethnicity. We bring all that to whatever it is we analyze. So this kind of brouhaha that, oh, there's all this bias. Well, what else is new? Tell me something I didn't know.
Right. But do you think that in essence it may have done her in when it came to getting the nomination?
No.
No.
Anybody who studies American politics would have to tell you no. Number one, she helped do herself in. You know, you can talk to people who specialize in political campaigns, which I don't. But I certainly do read their literature, and they, more than I, could tell you the 101 things she did wrong. okay? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's running a good campaign and running a bad campaign. And a lot of people who, as I say, specialize in this say she ran a disastrous campaign. I think also there are two problems that you have to add to the Hillary Clinton mix. To the extent that, you know, she's associated with Bill Clinton, and that's quite an extent, Bill Clinton's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was awful. I loved Bill Clinton when he was president. I voted for him twice. I thought he was a great president. I thought the impeachment thing was so bogus it made me sick. That none of that bothered me. I thought that he was so awful to her. I came to the conclusion, and I believe this. I don't know if he knows this himself or whether it's subconscious. But either consciously or subconsciously, Bill Clinton decided there was only going to be one Clinton president.
Hmm.
I'm serious.
Hmm.
Because his behavior was so harmful to her candidacy that, you know, you could just see the Obama sitting there saying, you know, give me five, go Bill. Because every time he opened his mouth, Obama did better.
And he did keep opening his mouth, didn't he? He would go on and on and on about himself.
always.
Right.
And I don't think I'm the only person who was turned off by his behavior. So yeah. I think that really hurt. People forgot. I'm from New York, okay? I remember when Clinton ran for the Senate in 2000. And I'm from upstate New York now. That's where I teach, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you I saw bumper stickers on many cars that said, not her, not here, not now.
Hmm.
That was the slogan. Hmm. Not her, not here, not now. She was not loved by upstate New York,
mm-hmm.
certainly. Very controversial figure she was. Now, I think, and I've said this before, I think she's overcome that in upstate New York.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question. I mean, her 2004 re-election, or 2006, excuse me, re-election, was not marked the same way that the 2001 was. But there are still a lot of people in, not just in upstate New York, that view her as a problematic figure. So to simply say Maureen Dowd did her in is silly.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about this issue? And I didn't find this true of her at all because, I don't know, maybe because of the stand on Iraq and maybe this, you know, what happened, which wasn't true in Bosnia. But
right.
This Clinton may not have passed the commander-in-chief test. This article made reference to that. It seems to me as though Obama had more of a problem with that particular issue than Clinton did.
I'll tell you, it depends on how you mean the term commander-in-chief. Because one thing I think really does hurt women, all women, is the sense that a lot of people, and I include women in this category, do not feel women are protectors.
Hmm.
Okay? If you want to feel protected, then you look to a man. I'm mm-hmm. saying a lot of people feel this way. And to the extent that the commander-in-chief is here to protect us and defend us, I think it's really difficult for women to be seen as fully capable of performing that.
Hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, right. But to me, she has a different image. She's got a very tough image. So
I
that
think
was,
she is tough. But yeah. What I'm saying is it's not clear to me that women can be tough enough.
Right. Interesting.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly.
Mm-hmm. What about this campaign they're going on together? This is going to be a sight to behold. Obama and Clinton hitting the road on Friday.
You know the wonderful expression, politics makes strange bedfellows.
Yeah. Right.
Not that I think they'll be sharing a room, but...
Probably not.
Oh, there's a nightmare, right? But you have to. I mean, it's really, really critical. The Democratic Party has to unite. just like the Republican Party does. I mean, the Republican Party has its own problems with some people on the extreme right or on the Christian right saying, you know, John McCain isn't our candidate. I can't vote for him. He's not conservative enough. And so if they don't unite, they're going to have their problems. And it's the same thing is true with the Democrats. If you have, especially when the campaign was so hard fought, and I think there really was hostility between the two of their campaigns. I don't mean the candidates, but the campaigns. By the time you got to the end, you have to make up. You just absolutely have to make up.
Yeah. Do you think that he will choose her? Would that be, and if he doesn't choose her, does he really have to forego choosing a woman for number two?
If I were on the Obama advisory committee, I would say under no circumstances do you choose anybody who is not a straight white male.
Hmm.
Absolutely. You need a straight white male, preferably one with a lot of experience in the military.
Why do you say that?
Because he is going to be challenge enough for some people to vote for Obama.
Hmm. Hmm.
You can't give them another reason not to vote Democratic.
Hmm.
Okay? And, for example, an Obama-Jim Webb ticket. I picked Jim Webb because he does fit all my criteria. He's straight white male. The one thing I don't like about Jim Webb is that he's also a senator. I wish he had been a governor, but you can't have everything. But he meets my other criteria. There are enough voters in enough swing states that want to vote for Obama. It's going to be hard for them. Maybe he is a Muslim. They don't like his wife. What was that power punch thing
right,
she did
right,
to him?
Right.
You know,
I know.
Right? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
and,
I know.
And then they look at the vice president, and she wears a skirt. Forget it. Forget it.
Okay, what about
now?
What,
I'm going for John McCain. It's much safer.
Yeah, and probably a good idea for him.
And so, that's why I say Obama, straight white man.
All right, let's go to phone calls. We have a lot of people who want to talk to you, and we'll invite more to join the conversation. Our guest is Professor Iva Deutschman, professor of political science at Hobart and William Smith College, and we are talking about, well, it's more than whether or not there should be a media hall of shame, which has been created by the National Organization for Women, who are concerned about the press treatment that Hillary Clinton received. We're also looking at Obama and Clinton on the road together starting this Friday. We're looking at whether or not it's difficult to for us to perceive a woman as being commander-in-chief, or their words that were used that were sexist words, why it is, and our guest makes a very interesting point, that increasingly female Republicans are a rare commodity when you look at who's in Congress and what's going on with that. Would it behoove John McCain to pick a woman? Would it be hard for Obama to pick a woman? Does he need, as her guest suggests, a straight gay, a straight white male? Is that his ticket? Preferably somebody with strong military experience. We got a lot on the table. Here's the number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, 414-227-2050 if you're joining us in Milwaukee. And if you'd like to send an email, it's talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's hop to our phone lines. We go to Nancy from Madison. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, thank you.
Sure.
I read a shocking article in the paper recently about the targeting of Michelle Obama by right-wing commentators, and a Fox News reporter, I believe it was Joe Scarborough, and if it's not, I apologize, but he referred to Michelle Obama as Barack's baby mama. Are you familiar with the term?
I know about the incident, yeah. And I don't think it was Joe Scarborough, but...
It wasn't him.
No.
But, you know, I mean, that to me, here you have an intelligent, dynamic woman who is Barack's wife.
Right.
And mother of her children, of his children,
yes,
referred to as a baby mama. I
right.
think that's so shocking.
Not for Fox News. Fox News is out on a statistical limb, if you know what I mean. It's so different from any normal mainstream newscast that in some ways it's the equivalent of Don Imus.
Mm.
It just doesn't surprise. So I'm not surprised. No other. I mean, you would not have seen that from anybody on CNN, MSNBC, ABC. No.
No.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
That doesn't make it acceptable. But I'm saying you can't take Fox News as a standard or a norm. Thank God.
Except that the reports are that these kinds of attacks are going to just keep on coming.
From them, yes.
Right.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Which some people say is part of the logic in Barack's flip-flop on public financing.
Hmm. Oh, interesting.
In other words, when he said he wanted public financing and he believed in public financing, I don't think he was thinking about the fact that he and his family were going to be victims of these kind of attacks,
mm-hmm,
that would take a lot more money, right, to counter than you get in public financing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, public financing is all good and well, assuming we're all equal.
Mm-hmm.
But once it's the case that I've got to defend myself in ways that you don't,
mm-hmm,
then we're not the same, and I probably will need more money to defend myself.
Thanks very much for the call. Yeah, I have to say that I don't fully understand why they're on her. She's got this narrative, poor family, south side of Chicago, goes to the Ivy League, bright as can be, very, very... you know, great in just expressing issues, very concerned about lots and lots of issues. Why take her on?
I think, again, there are probably a couple of reasons. Part of it is she's, in the style of Hillary Clinton, right, in terms of first ladies. Cynthia McCain is much more in the Laura Bush style.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, she's never been a career woman.
Mm-hmm.
I understand she's very wealthy, but that was inherited wealth, not made wealth.
Mm-hmm.
If she has a law degree from Harvard, she's kept that information very close to the vest.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but Michelle Obama, like Hillary Clinton, is a feminist type of woman, you know, violates the traditional first lady walk 10 paces behind the husband role.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's problems there. What if we have problems imagining a woman president, you know, what's the first lady's job? Well, she's supposed to shut up and you know, coffee or tea with that.
Right.
Right.
I thought, did you read that story about when she was on The View, the dress that she wore? Was it pretty dress? Boy, we just can't get beyond this. All of a sudden, all these stores, I don't know where she got it, sold out of them within about an hour. You've got to fulfill that role, too. You got to wear the right clothes.
Oh, absolutely. And all the discussion about she doesn't wear pantyhose.
Oh, right, yeah. John Anderson, our producer here, says that the designer of that dress is from Wisconsin.
Uh-huh.
There's an interview for us, right? We'll do an hour on that. All right, let's go to Muhammad from Madison. Hi, Muhammad.
Good morning, Kathleen. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just find, two things I want to say. One, and this is to my women friends. I was advised when I took a number of courses dealing with healing racism as an African-American that it is not a good thing to do to compare your oppression with Native Americans or
mm-hmm.
Hispanics or women, because anyone who is a victim of any type of oppression or discrimination is never going to feel that theirs is less than someone else's.
Mm-hmm.
So I would rather see the women of the world, my mothers, sisters, daughters, cousins, etc., develop an alliance with those men who would like to see the ceiling not only crack but remove from them, rather than setting up these opposing camps. The second thing I want to say is it's amazing to me that the voice of reason in the Republican Party turns out to be former Governor Mike Huckabee, who has warned his fellow Republicans to not go after Barack Obama in this manner.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would include his wife, going after her in this manner is just not going to bode well for them in the long run. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks, Muhammad.
Very, very astute comments. I happen to be a huge fan of Mike Huckabee's, and I was at the Conservative Political Action Conference this past March when Mike Huckabee spoke and made his very, very famous comment about, "I didn't major in mathematics, I majored in miracles."
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought that was wonderful. So I'm not surprised that the voice of reason from the Republican Party is Mike Huckabee. I also think that your caller's comment was so on the money. There are so many kinds of oppression and so many individuals who are victims of oppression. And certainly the idea of comparing and trying to say I somehow have suffered more than you is not a way to build an alliance and not a way to stop all of the kinds of oppression.
Mm-hmm.
None of them are good. And obviously we're focusing on gender in this particular segment of your show, but that doesn't mean that there are no other kinds of oppression or that gender is somehow worse than something else. So
right.
I think his comments are right on the money.
You know, either way you look at it, Professor Deutschman, the fact that this still astounds me, the fact that you had a woman and a black man
yes.
being the finalists for this position is incredible to me.
I agree. And again, I want to stress, not in the Republican Party. I just think that part is also so important here. For all of us who care about the fact that this country needs to have at least two strong political parties. I mean, when I look at what the Republican Party has, which is to say a 70-plus white male, and I look at the Democrats fighting between a white woman and an African-American man, you tell me which party is the party of the future.
Mm, yeah. Mary from Madison is next. Hey, Mary.
Oh, my. There's so many wonderful things a person could address. Forgive me. I, too, am excited and astounded that we wound up with a black and a woman, but the hard fact of the matter is minorities and women generally get into situations when things are falling apart. Or when there's less money to be made and the men are already fleeing for high-status fields elsewhere. However we get there is not a bad thing at all. I only wanted to say that the ugliness with which Senator Clinton has been treated, for me, started way back when Bill was first elected,
mm-hmm.
when the feminist movement was still clicking along and people didn't try hard to disassociate themselves from it. Now that they've gotten what they wanted out of it, I was so taken aback all around me to hear people immediately say, excuse me, when there was coverage on television of the inauguration, their first response was, "She's got fat legs,"
mm-hmm.
which shows you what a disadvantage women's clothing can be when you're not 18.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard over and over again, well, of course she has to wear pantsuits. She's got ugly legs. Then as we got into this election, again, I was taken aback at the ugliness of it and hearing commentators on the local radio stations call people that wanted Clinton to have a shot the KY jelly generation. So there's nothing they won't say. Now, I guess we could find a counterpart. Oh, pardon me, the weather's making me hoarse. For men that age, but what's the point?
Mm-hmm.
Your prescription at the pharmacy doesn't have much to do with whether or not you're suitable to be a leader.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I also thought your guest comment was so astute about the way women are viewed. And it's another major problem I believe all of us had with her, even though nobody's proud of it. And that is, every time she raised her voice, of course, unlike a man's, rather than get deeper, it would start to crack and whine.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to run out of the room.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the younger women finally said what everybody knew in their gut, which is, it's like being scolded by your mother. And so many of the purported excited younger generation that's flocking to Obama is still trying to separate from mom. Hmm. And anybody that grew up in a traditional family understood from the time they were 4 or 5 who has the power.
Yeah, you
and
got
generally
it.
What the right. female children got hit with was not only a ton of housework that the husband wouldn't do, and the boys weren't supposed to do because their work was more like once a week they'd go out and mow the lawn.
How do you think Bill complicated her efforts?
Oh, so much.
Yeah.
And talk about the crabs pulling the one escaping crab back into the bucket.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I never understood why Bill Diddling, this ditzy intern, became a public property debate,
mm-hmm.
I thought that was strictly between him and his wife. But in me, where the real damage was done was that a highly educated woman with a nearly adult child chose to stay, which said to me on a gut level, of course, I would do better. Whether that was true or not, who knows?
Mm-hmm.
But I think it allowed every woman in the country to say, I would do better than she did.
Mm-hmm.
And if she can't even stand up for herself with some respect at home, how on earth would she run a country?
Anyway, that's interesting. Take off on that. Would you, Professor Deutschman, what that meant for her?
It's a very interesting point.
Yeah.
I think people feel a variety of ways about it. I mean, I certainly thought about the fact that it seemed to me they must have had a deal. And the deal was realized, or Hillary thought it was going to be realized in 2008, but that they were a political team, and the deal was they were supposed to support each other, and if she left, she would not get her part of the deal from him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in other words, I think she didn't leave for that reason.
Hmm.
Not because, you know, she was afraid to leave or anything like that. Although, you know, I know this isn't the prime focus of your program, but there have been a number, as I'm sure you and your caller are very well aware, of men in politics, right, cheating on their wives.
Sure.
And remember we had our own Governor Spitzer a few months ago,
mm-hmm.
with the prostitute, and his wife stood by him at
mm-hmm.
the press conference, and there was a whole big discussion afterwards of, you know, the wife by the side of the husband,
mm-hmm.
and the question, well, why was this woman staying? And remember the governor of New Jersey, and the same question, why are these women always standing by their man? Right? Isn't that what Hillary
right.
even said
right.
at one point, right? Why are they always standing by their man? And I think for Hillary, that was the deal.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why Zelda Spitzer stood by Elliot. I don't think of her as a political person, although I could be wrong about that. But I think for Hillary, she stood by Bill because she made a calculation that this guy had more to give her by her side and could do more for her than if she got rid of him.
Mm, interesting. And he didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he didn't.
Right.
Exactly. Because that's what I said to you before. I don't know if it was conscious or subconscious, but on his part, he was damned if he was going to see a second President Clinton.
Mm. Mary, thanks for the call. We go to Mary from Dubuque, Iowa. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
How's it going?
Good. How are you, Mary?
Great.
Good.
Hi, Professor Deutschman.
Hi. How are you?
Great. Hey, talking about what you were just talking about, maybe she'll get rid of him now. Who knows? Who knows? He doesn't seem to be doing much good for her. But what I called to say was, I know that Joe Biden is a senator, but wouldn't
yes.
he make a great VP?
You know, there's a lot of pluses to Joe Biden. I think the two big negatives, maybe I'm the only one who remembers this because I'm a political scientist, but he ran for president before several times, and he was busted for plagiarizing.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I had heard, but, you know, it seems
yeah.
like people can
and,
make beyond
and
some of
you know,
those
if
things.
I remember this, tell me there's not somebody on the McCain team. They're 70-something. They've got to remember this.
Sure.
Well, sure. But
and
McCain has
so
been,
that would be a negative.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, but he also has had problems with the Keating Five, and, you know, people don't seem to bring that up.
You're absolutely right. I guess the big difference is that McCain, in at least in the minds of the media, apologized enough about the Keating Five, and he also had, you know how George Bush got really drunk and then found God?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I think that was McCain, you know? The Keating Five was his getting really drunk and finding God. The Keating Five was him becoming, quote-unquote, a maverick,
mm-hmm.
you know, starting to ask questions, not going along with the crowd. And so they love him for that.
Sure. What do you think? I mean, it's my opinion. I think that I think it would be a benefit for a VP to be proposed before the convention. I mean, I would like to see one, like, right now to help Obama kind of take on those Swift voters.
Well, so far there aren't any Swift voters. And actually, and interestingly, Obama's got the financial advantage over McCain. I never thought you'd live to see a Democrat taking in so much more money than a Republican, but we're seeing it. And there doesn't seem to be any Swift boat situation arising. Now, that everything could change.
Yep, and I'm sure it will.
You know, I mean, none of us saw the Swift boat coming.
Exactly, exactly. They, you know, they might just be calculating or biding their time.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But, you know, I also think in Obama's case, more so than in McCain's case, because McCain's been around forever, and everybody knows him. Everybody does not know Obama. Mm-hmm. I think he would be better served spending a month, like July, introducing himself to people, going around, you know, to people who don't know him,
sure.
and letting them get to know him before he starts going around with his VP.
Hmm. Thanks, Mary, very much for calling. Nice to talk to you.
Yeah, good to talk to you, Kathleen.
Yeah, thanks. Mary invited us on the air some months ago, back in January. Professor Deutschman, she said, why don't you bring the show to Dubuque for the primary? And I said, okay. And then we went and had a terrific time. It was,
oh, that's great.
Yeah, it was really fun.
I got to say, all these calls from Madison, right? I'm assuming the university. And those callers are also smart. It's such a pleasure to talk to such smart people.
All right. Did you hear that, audience? We can't tell you that enough. You are smart people.
It's true.
Yeah. Let's go to June from Shawano. Hi, June.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, June.
Hi, Professor.
Hi.
I just want to, I'm calling about Michelle Obama, but I want to make a remark about Hillary Clinton and Bill. I had a West Indian friend who once told me that it was a known fact that some men were going to stray, particularly West Indian men. And a woman had to put up with that if she loved her husband.
Hmm.
And I learned that that happens and that the emotions are not always well understood in an intelligent woman. That's my comment about that. And about Michelle Obama, I think what she adds to this campaign is that she adds the strong character of a black woman. And when she raises her fist in the Black Power salute, one remembers that that was a time back in Mexico when you could make that salute, and people really remember this for some reason, even though times have changed and those athletes have been honored today.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that about her, particularly because, and I can speak of this because my son is black and he is an African-American just like Obama, and he voted for Hillary Clinton in the primaries like I did. And there was a time when the black people were not sure about Obama in the beginning, and
right.
She brings that to the family, and I think she's great.
Hmm.
I think both of the comments are right on target. It's very interesting because we're analyzing Hillary's decision to stay from a political perspective. But your caller's quite right that many couples face this in their own lives, and they make whatever decision they make, and we just don't see Hillary Clinton as, you know, just a regular woman faced with a problem marriage, right? We're always analyzing it in a political light. So I think that your caller does well to remind us that this is not an unusual situation. Indeed, I've often pointed out to my students that in a public opinion poll I saw on the question of cheating on your spouse, 60% of American men told a pollster they had cheated on their spouse.
Ooh.
60%.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's told a pollster.
How many?
So
don't tell
imagine,
the pollster.
You right. know, it's got to be higher that there are numbers. Oh, no, not me, not me.
Right, right.
But, of course, they did.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So, obviously, a lot of women have no doubt found out and made a decision to stay with their partner.
Right, right. More phone calls in a moment. Professor Iva Deutschman is our guest, professor of political science at Hobart and William Smith College. And we are talking about whether or not there is a lot of sexism in politics and going a wee bit beyond that as well. Looking at Senator Clinton and if there should be a media hall of shame. Looking at some of the press's treatment of Michelle Obama, whether or not a female vice presidential candidate on either side would be a good idea or a bad idea. And more. So we'll be back with you in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We have one line open if you'd like to join the conversation. The number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. In Milwaukee, it's 414-227-2050. Email address is talk@wpr.org. Reed from Clintonville. Hi.
Good morning. Thanks for this opportunity. Say, I'd just like to make a comment concerning the visual aspect of the campaign in regards to both Barack Obama and his wife, Michelle. They're both very young and seemingly energetic, but they dress a little bit younger, a little more contemporary. They tend to smile more or look more pleasant, and as opposed to John McCain and his wife, Cindy, who both dress rather dowdily. Boy, if you see what Cindy McCain wears, I can't believe it. But and also, they both look somewhat angry all the time. And I think there is a strong visual impact to elections and to voting that is sort of subliminal that has not really been acknowledged, or maybe it's recognized by handlers and so forth, but maybe not by the general public.
Yeah, I think because we like to think that's silly, you know, that should be beneath us. But of course, television is a visual image, and we respond to how people look. I think he's right. We hate to admit it, though.
Interestingly enough, I think it was on CNN the other day, and I hate to make this comment because I'm now indulging in the very thing I criticize. Mm. But I think it was on CNN when I heard a woman reporter say the opposite of what your caller just said.
Hmm.
The woman reporter was complimenting Cindy McCain on her dressing and said she dressed particularly well and very usefully.
Hmm.
So, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it also, you know, in it plays into this. My thoughts about the images of the two of them is that all these comparisons are made to Kennedy, but you can't help but think about that if you were alive in those days with the two young children and the youthfulness, and not necessarily what they wear, but that particular image is a strong one in our nation's consciousness.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And I think in that regard, Obama represents that same, you know, new frontier, new direction. And going back to where we began the conversation about what did in Hillary Clinton, One of the things that, quote-unquote, did her in was that she's also seen very much as, you know, she's last century. She's the past.
Right, right.
And Barack Obama's the future.
Right.
And lots of people, even people over 50, embrace the future.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not interested in looking at the past anymore.
Right. Thanks, Reed, for the call. Let's go next to Stephen from New Berlin. Hi, Stephen.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm from New Berlin, and I'm only 12, but I was listening to the radio earlier, and it seemed to me like you guys were making white men out to be kind of bad people. And I'm not saying that I don't like black people. My uncle's a black man, and my mom and both my grandmas, if they don't believe in what you tell them to do, they won't do it. But it seems like you were making them out to be bad people, and like they're controlling everything. But there are women in Congress, and I know that, and there are people who are up there, but some women just don't want to work. They prefer to be home moms. And I don't think that men should be blamed for that if they don't feel like doing it.
Professor Dreutschman.
I'm not saying that men are bad people or white men are bad people. What I am saying is we live in a country, in a world, where men have power over women, where the relationship between men and women is unfortunately not equal. And a lot of times out of that inequality, you think that people make choices. They're not really so much choices as they are ways of conforming or ways of avoiding problems or fights or difficulties that arise because of inequality. We need to live in a situation, in a society, where people have more equality, and so we won't even be having this conversation anymore.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the call. Jonathan from Waukesha, hi.
Oh, Kathleen, thanks for taking my call.
Well, sure.
Hey, I really want to tip my hat to the previous caller. When I was 12 years old, I was laying in bed at night listening to you on WTMJ.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, the years have passed,
yeah.
Jonathan.
It was different. I actually liked AM radio, and you got my start as being a talk radio fanatic.
Oh, thank you.
But unfortunately, I've turned to the dark side, so I'm your resident conservative.
Uh-huh.
Here. And here's my question. I've heard you talking with your guest, and you're just gushing about the fact we have a black and a woman and a black and a woman.
Right.
And, you know, I can see in my mind Archie Bunker sitting in his chair with Mike Stivic next to him and, you know, the meathead. He'd say, hey, I got a good joke for you. Yeah, okay, Arch, as Mike rolls his eyes. Yeah, there were three guys, you know, a Catholic, a black, and a Jew. And at that point, Mike interrupts, you know, Arch, why do you have to label everybody?
Mm-hmm.
Why can't you just accept people for what they are and what, you know, who they are? And we're all, you know, created equal, you know,
right,
as the Constitution says, the whole thing. So why this obsession on the left with identity politics?
You know, I agree with you. It's just that we're not there yet, I don't think. We're not there yet. Look at who's been president all of these years. I just think it's and look at how African Americans have had to live in this country, and look how short a period of time since women have had the right to vote. It's just still remarkable to me.
Okay, but I'm there with Mike Stivic. But why do you have to label everybody? Why can't they just be people?
I wish, you know, I wish we were there. Professor Dreutschman, what do you think?
I agree with you. I wish we were there. Mm. We don't live in that society, unfortunately. And we're never going to get to live in that society unless we transition through the one we're in.
Hmm.
And that means having a discussion. It's a discussion about power. The problem is we live in a society where whites have power, men have power, wealthier people have power. We live in a society where we're not all equal.
Yeah.
And if we're ever going to get to a society where we are all equal, you know, that's where we want to be. It's not that any of us are disagreeing. And once we're in that society, we won't have to spend all our time engaging in identity politics. Mm.
Thank you so much, Jonathan, for listening for all those years. It's a long time. Professor Deutschman, you were terrific. We'll have you back. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Good. Professor Iva Deutschman, professor of political science at Hobart and William Smith College, written a number of books, co-host of a weekly radio talk show, Plato's Cave, that offers a commentary on politics, the press, and popular media. And we thank her for her time this morning. Thanks to Rob Ferret for producing this hour, and to John Anderson for on-air production in our Milwaukee studios. And thanks, everybody, for all of your calls. As always, you're smart. News is up. We'll be with you again tomorrow at 9 on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.